And we're back here once again with another episode of the Iron Man Podcast, episode 355, with Mr. Critical Blast once again. This is going to be his second appearance on the show. So like I've mentioned before, with any of the guests that have had first appearances already, go on the, through the episodes of the Iron Man Podcast on Rumble, if you guys are following on Rumble, go and check out the first appearance of Critical Blast. We had a great conversation. I think he was on like episode 56 or 65 or something like that, you know. And now at this point, we're like already going to be almost in the 400s. So it only made sense to, you know, ask him to come back for, you know, a second appearance, because I've learned a lot more, you know, since the last time we talked. Like I said before, last time, or like to a lot of other people on the show. I like to let kids, you know, go do off their own thing. You know, they come back and they're like, "Dad, let's just talk over a cold beer at the bar and tell you how bad liberal colleges are. Don't you love it?" You know, and I know everyone's going to want us to talk about the whole like rip and send thing. I told people before, I have never shied away from talking about things that other guests are a part of and want to talk about. But, you know, because I feel like if you blow your load too soon, no one really wants to watch later on, you know? So. This is something that I want to ask you, because we didn't really ever go over this last time with the indie comic fulfillment thing. So this is what I want to point out to someone, because I know you've maybe seen the streams where I completely went eight ball shit on someone who said something so beyond retarded, my brain almost couldn't comprehend it. And I had to like physically in my own body not want to go outside and walk into a fucking line of oncoming traffic to end that shit, because what this person said is so fucking stupid, I legit needed to get a knife to slit my goddamn throat. He legitimately said 99.99% of creators in the indie comic scene space will not need services like Ripasen. And then you factor into yourself, wait a minute, you exist. He knew you existed. So this is how you can tell most people don't know what the fuck they're talking about. When I don't know what I'm talking about with something, I don't speak about it at all. I just go, hey, I'll ask Critical Blast about this shipping thing that I don't know about. I'll ask X person what I don't know about something to learn about it. Saying things like that are so stupid, because these people claim they know about the indie comic scene. They know you exist. They know you fulfill people's stuff. Yet they say things like, well, no one needs those services. Then why does he exist then? If you could do it by yourself, indie comic creator, why do you need to exist? Why are you here then? Because people are lazy, dude. That's the thing. You probably identified this. If they don't want to do it, wait a minute. I can just get all the money that they're going to, you know, pay, and I'll just do it for you. It's going to cost you a service, and people say they like your services. You provide a good thing for people. I'm actually glad you do that. But for people to say certain things like, I could do it myself. No, you can. If you could do it, we wouldn't have all these late campaigns. Then if you could do it yourself, that's such a disingenuous lie.
You know, there. At some level, though, it's true. I mean, I have run into people that said, hey, you know what? This thing you're offering to do, I can do this myself, so I don't see the need for it. I'm like, yes, you absolutely can. What'd you have for lunch? Hamburger and fries. Great. Did you kill that cow? Well, no, I got it. Don't you know how to kill a cow? It's real easy to kill a cow. You just get a cow and you kill it. You can do it yourself. And you just get a grinder and you grind up the meat. That's not impossible. How'd you get home? Did you drive? Yeah. Did you build the car yourself? Well, no. You know somebody built that car. If somebody built it, you can build it. You can get parts. You can put them together. So anything in the world that can be done, that you can do yourself.
That's how you can tell. That's how you can tell you're talking to nothing but a bunch of illiterate idiots. I'm not trying to call everyone like that, but the way you guys speak, you talk like actual idiots. And people, someone got mad at me. He was like, "Why do you call people idiots all the time?" Because people are stupid. Because when someone says something stupid to me, my instinct in my brain goes, "Okay, sure. No, I'm going to call you stupid." Obviously not you, but. You know, like when someone says, hey, I can go do this on my own. Cool. Do you change the oil out of your own car, or do you pay someone to do it? Oh, I pay someone. What the fuck? What are we even arguing here? Right? Like people have to understand that's the reason why jobs are created. Jobs are created like yours to fulfill the needs of other people's businesses that they don't want to do. Why do people hire contractors then to do electrical work on their building? I'm not an electrician. I'm not going to go do electrical work on my own house. I'll die. I'm not kidding. I will put something in some place and I will die, actually.
What's this red wire doing?
So that was the most craziest thing. They were like, yeah, this Ripasen thing is so bad because all the creators can just do it by themselves. Okay, then what? People, they knew you existed and they were like, I asked them, well, why would he need to? If people could do it on their own, why do you exist? And they're like, oh, but he does a great. Okay, we're arguing two different things then. If they like you more, that's a different argument. But to say that people don't need these services is asinine, and that is stupid. You fulfilled Drunk 3PO's campaign. Drunk 3PO brought in $100K for a campaign. Drunk 3PO legitimately didn't want to do it himself. He had you do it to fulfill the part of like shipping the books out and getting people on time. Guys, Drunk 3PO has like 75,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel. He does the kid stuff. He does all that things. He's also a great guy. I like that guy a lot.
But he has multiple YouTube channels, by the way. I mean, yeah, I learned while he was here. Mm-hmm. He came and visited, and we, you know, fulfilled books together, had several dinners. And, you know, he's got his regular channel, but then still under his channel, he's got Jay Walking the Earth, which is a great channel where he just does videos all the different places he visits around the country. And he's shot several of them while he was here.
Oh, another person that a lot of you guys know in the scene, the girl who does Fiendish, Irene Strakowski, that's what the name she goes by.
Yes.
I had a friend on, everyone saw, I had a friend on, close friend of hers who can just DM her whenever he wants to, because, you know, they're friends and she's a hard person to reach to. He mentioned this is what she said, and I'm also paraphrasing this too. You can people go back and watch the episode. Basically, she did fulfill Fiendish 1 by herself. And what he told me on the show was that she said she will never do that again. So someone like, I'm not taking any shots. I'm just saying a lot of the popular creators in the indie space, you guys know, use Critical Blast to do their fulfillment. So I don't want to hear this faking on social media going, I do it all myself. If you did it all yourself, you would have your books out on time, but you have them out on time because you leverage it to someone else. Like, that's what I hate. Like, don't fake. Like, I know what's going on. I'm not retarded. I could just simply just ask you, like, do you fulfill this guy's book? You're like, yeah, I did. Okay. Like, I know you fulfilled Nick's book. Nick's Phoenix Press, actually. Nick didn't really want to do that part. Like, there's a reason why no one wants to do, like, the customer service jobs. Those jobs suck, actually, you know?
Yeah. And you know, like, after my day job, I want to do something mindless where I think about things. My day job is I'm a data scientist. So
are you Bill Nye?
I work in everything from relational databases to AI. So I'm having to stay on top of all of it. So, you know, and I use that to build my personal businesses, the publishing and the distribution. So that's what sort of what makes it so fast is the way we've got the pack lists built, make it so that I can give it to two or three laborers that I hire, friends of mine who are disabled. They can't get a full-time job with benefits and everything else, but they can pack. They can pack
that's
comics.
It's only like, be in a wheelchair, but they can bag and board. Yeah, you
exactly.
have hands that work.
That's what I do. Mm-hmm. So I've hired them piecework. So it's not like they're not my employees. They're sort of like, you know, the guy who mows the lawn. You pay him and then you're done. You don't know what his tax is.
They're like the pay under the table kind of guys. Yeah. Well, so what's actually this?
I report it.
Okay. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, IRS, you know, bullshit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, no, if it costs me money, that's a deduction. I take it.
Well, I wanted to ask you this since we had talked about all your like origin stories and stuff last time. So when did you in the market identify that there was a lot of these people didn't actually want to go through the customer service fulfillment part of their campaigns?
They sort of identified me. And what happened was the only thing I was doing was a website that did reviews. And
I remember that, yeah.
As part of that, we had a show where we interviewed creators. And we had on Lee Byron, Kimisabi. He did The Company Men. And he was having a problem because he was in Australia. He had this gorgeous freaking book that nobody was buying. And the reason nobody was buying it was because it was a $25 book and it was about $45 to $60 in shipping to the US, which is where everybody who buys comic books pretty much is. And the idea struck me and I, you know, talked to him about it, says, why don't you package them all up, send them to me, and you know, because it's cheaper to send one box of 100 books than it is to send 100 boxes of one book. And then I will sell them out. You know, I will mail them domestically within the States. He was like, okay, let's do that. And we set up, you know, what it would cost, what I would charge. And it got his shipping down to like $8 a book. And all of a sudden his sales
that's
exploded.
Big. Yeah.
Because now people would say, oh, that's a shipping cost I will afford.
Right. Yeah.
Then the second person who called me was, I'm trying to think of The Embrace. Okay. Mm-hmm. Michael Oden. And he called me up and said, hey, can you do for me what you did for Kimisabi? He told me, like, well, yeah, I can. Where you at? He's like, I'm in Virginia. I'm not saving you any money. In fact, I'm actually costing you more money to do it. He's like, you don't understand. I don't want to do it. And I was like, okay, so something that I was doing to help international just became a wide open market. And I'm like, then let's do this. And I put up, I advertised the services, word of mouth spread that, you know, these orders came in, and guess what? They ended up in the hands of the readers very quickly, because, you know, it's an organized pack list. You don't have to go through, okay, who made this order? This guy, what's it got in it? This, print a label, stick it on. Okay, now do the next order. I don't go that way. I have software that I wrote that takes all the orders. Somebody ordered multiple times. Somebody ordered from multiple campaigns or platforms. Mm-hmm. It all goes together into one order. And then it's like, okay, everybody who ordered all the same things, give them a label. A1, what's it mean? It means that they all ordered the same thing. That's all it means. A2 means the next set of things.
And that stuff, and you do all yourself, right?
I do it all myself.
That's if you track on your own. Okay.
Yeah, I wrote the stuff, and I track it on myself. And then I say, okay, print me a pack list. It's like, okay, A1 has this, 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 and this in it, and you make 75 of them. Okay, and I go to the people downstairs. I'm like, hey, here's a pack list, 75 of these. And write A1 on every package when you're done. Then I go up and I print out a whole sheet of labels, not one at a time, and every label says A1 at the bottom. I like, put it on an A1. And it's just assembly line process.
The next thing I'll ask is, a lot of people probably don't know this. When the word fulfillment, that means, do you handle talking to the actual printers too? A lot of people would assume fulfillment is that.
I have had people ask me before, you know, can you recommend printers? I do recommend printers. I've told people who has sent me stuff that's in good condition, and who has sent me stuff that's come damaged. So, you know, printers, if you ship out your stuff loose and damaged, I'm going to tell them. I open it on a stream live with them, and I take pictures live if I can. Pictures definitely, for sure. And I say, look, these corners are all shoved into the corner of the box. Every single book has a dent right here. And they've, you know, returned stuff because it was damaged. But now it's a little different. Now, I've been told, or rather, I haven't been told directly. I have heard online.
From the grapevine, yeah?
Yes. But never before in the industry has there existed a place where you can distribute, fulfill, and publish all under the same roof. Doesn't exist. Never existed. Except for one problem. We've been doing it for 3 years.
That girl has some big boobs.
Yeah, she does. This is a version of the Joe King versus Job ads. I show this because this is just a 36-page graphic novel that, you know, we publish. We're publishing graphic novels. We are publishing comic books. So
I'll eventually buy that for science purposes to, you know, use later.
But if you're a real fan of comics, you'll want to buy this. This is on my comic right now.
Oh, I talked to Dave. I was going to have Dave on, but Dave's time zone is so odd. So getting Dave on is really hard, I would say. Does he still have that available on his website? Because I wanted to buy his book. It's just...
Well, this one is funding right now. This is the artist edition, which we are also publishing. So, and it's going to be bigger. This is just a prototype. The final one's going to be 130 pages. And it's all Pal Roderick's art. It's behind-the-scenes sketches. It's a reproduction of the book in black and white and in color with a full bleed, oversized. We're not out of fulfillment, but we've expanded fulfillment to publishing and creative services. So not only do we just publish what you give us, we edit it. And we're like, we'll do the lettering if you need that. We'll do the color fixing if you need that.
Yeah. And then people don't have to understand that all that money that gets made on a campaign, well, you would know this. This is what people don't understand when I'm going to bring that up, which is like, someone probably asks, what is his rate? People, you don't ask that to people. You do not ask someone what they make every month on their job. It's just something. It's just like, what is with people now? And they want to know every little detail of your life. It's like, what's your eye color? What kind of soap do you use in the shower? It's like, I'm not telling that. That is worthless information for you to have. It's like someone asked me to me, is like, well, what is Critical Blast Charts compared to Air July? I was like, I don't care. And I don't know. And I don't give a fuck.
Here's the thing. I've had several people ask me before. They're like, what do you charge for your campaign? I'm like, or for your fulfillment services. I'm like, what have you kicked off your campaign yet? Well, no, I'm thinking about doing it. Okay. Here's what I charge. Nothing.
That's the thing, is, if they don't have an active campaign, why would they even be asking you that? Unless they legitimately think about doing it, right?
They might be getting ready to launch, and they haven't yet. And you know, that's a good sign that they're thinking about everything ahead of time before they pull the trigger on something. Mm-hmm. The cost to the creator, nothing. Big goose egg. Let that sink in. Because here's what we do. We sit down with you before your campaign. It's like, what's on this tier? Well, I've got the comic book and a trading card. Okay. Well, a comic book weighs 11 ounces, and it's going to go into a bag and a board, which costs 25 cents. That's going to go into a Gemini mailer, which costs 80 cents. That Gemini mailer is going to go into a poly bag, which costs another 35 cents. Postage on that is going to be $4.26. I charge $2.25 for handling charge. That's how I make my money. And that comes up to about $8. So if you charge shipping of $10, you pay nothing. I'm after the shipping money, not your money. So you tell the customer, hey, this is what it cost me to ship it, which includes handling. Now, we put all that stuff together. You don't have to put your book in a bag and a board. We do that. You don't have to tape it shut. We do that. You don't have to print the labels. We do that.
I don't even understand why people don't understand half this stuff. It just blows my mind. It's like, guys, do you think that Marvel does what he just said for all of their titles? I'm just going to tell you, right? No. And there's a lot of naive people out there that don't know this stuff. Marvel does not do what you just told me to all their books. They have someone else do it. Do people think something Zablosky, the editor now, is doing all that? No, he called people. Yeah. He was like, hey, can you do all of this thing for me? Yes, we can. Good. That's it. That's all he did.
They have and they have Diamond distribute them.
Yeah, that's it. So that's all. Is Diamond, it unethical? This is a film agency. Yeah, is it unethical if Marvel did that? No, this is what people have been doing since the dawn of time. Why do you have a postal service then? That's why they exist. They ship, you bring it to them, they do the heavy work for you. You know, it's essentially like when people had that argument of like Mexicans coming over and taking jobs. That Mexican Felipe is going to go in Home Depot, clean the toilet for a job. He needs a job. People will do the jobs other people don't do. And those jobs that people don't want to do, pay the good amount, because those are the jobs that, you know, people don't want to do. You're doing the thing that no one else wants to do, counting how many books you've actually backed on a campaign to see how much shipping it'll cost and how much it'll be in all the stuff you just told me, right? A lot of people don't want to do that.
Maybe it's not so much that they don't want to do it, but maybe they would rather spend that time creating the next comic book.
I mean, that's true.
If you're spending 2 months fulfilling a campaign and you get out 2 books a year, well, maybe if you have somebody fulfill it, you can get out 3 books a year. Maybe you can get out 4 books a year.
Oh, sorry about that, everyone. So it's really odd to see like all this like indie comic scene drama when it's a lot of it's based in just what the stuff you told me. It's like, if you guys are all good and dandy and you could do it all yourself and you're the best, do it yourself then. I hope the campaign comes out on time. I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying that a lot of you guys don't do it. And it's just funny to see people like kind of flexing, like, I did it all myself. You did. You packed all those books by yourself. I doubt it. I would know.
Some people do.
And crazy. You know,
some people get, I don't know how to describe it really, but let's just say that they don't do the accounting properly when they ship their books or when they fulfill their campaign. It's like, you know, they got all the money in for their campaign, and it's like, we printed the books, hookers and blow, with the rest of it now. And
sounds
like,
good, right? Makes sense.
And I saw people, I've seen campaigns say, look at this stack of Gemini mailers. They're folded up, they're taped shut. We're doing fulfillment. And then 3-4 months later, I finally get my book. I'm like, what took so long? And then it dawns on me like, oh, you spent the shipping money. You got to come up with it out of your own.
Because like people have to understand when they're doing a campaign, a lot of this stuff, that money goal you guys see, I don't know how many campaigns you can go into like specifics. I'm pretty sure you can't because it's like NDAs and shit like that. But I'll ask you this then. How many campaigns have you fulfilled over the time you've been doing it where the campaign's not just made money, not like breaking even, they've actually made profit from like their campaign numbers versus when they pay you and they have the leftover money? How many of them do you think roughly have made profit actually?
I hope they've all made profit. I'm not privy to their finances. I package their stuff up and I send them an invoice and I say, here's what you have to pay me to get your books out. But how many campaigns have I done? If you'll hang on just a second, I'll send you a link that will go into perfect detail on that.
Mm. Also, sorry guys, if you're hearing an ambulance outside of black guys running down the street, running from the cops. It's usually what they do, actually.
Ugh. They don't run towards them.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. If you run towards them, you might die, actually. So, I don't think I've ever asked you this. What made you choose the name Critical Blast, actually?
Sorry, I had my mic muted there because I knew my video would start playing immediately. It was a situation where I had spent 14 or more years writing reviews and being an admin for another site that was doing the review thing that CriticalBlast.com was doing. And the owner finally said, you know what, next month I'm not doing it anymore. We're closing things down. I'm like, okay, do you want me to keep running? He's like, no, I'm gonna sell the .com to somebody or keep a hold of the .com name for a while. I'm like, well, crap. I wasn't getting paid. Because, you know, it wasn't that kind of a site. But I did enjoy, you know, getting the books and the movies and the DVDs for review. So, like, I'm not done doing this yet. So I opened my own website. And we just, you know, sort of brainstormed a bunch of different ideas, Critical Blast being among them. Because, you know, we were being critical and we were going to blast things. And it sort of sounded like Critical Mass or a critical explosion. And it was the only one on the list where everything was open on social media. So we locked it down. Nobody had used it, and now it's ours. It doesn't make much sense for logistics and fulfillment now because it's like, well, what do you mean you're blasting pop culture? So we're going to change the logo under the symbol for the other divisions now. Reviews will still be, the same as it is.
Because I know, Mr. Pops Van Sant.
Absolutely, I know Pops.
Yeah, he had the campaign of the whole Roku thing. Is he still gonna do that? I think actually, right? Because I think he had messaged me talking about, do I want to still bring my show to the Roku channel? It's like I it's not that I didn't want to do it. It's at the time, you know, other massive bills came up, and I was like, I couldn't really expend money toward the campaign. I told him this, you know, too. It's like I think this is the reason why a lot of people don't even back campaigns. It's not because they don't even want to, like you mentioned before. It's just it's a lot of money. People factor in. Marvel and DC, whoever you buy comics from, Image, Dark Horse, they can charge you like $5.99 or at max like $9.99 for like whatever pages on any book or title you're buying. Any people have to charge you way more because you're paying the artists, maybe using services like yours. They're charging like $30 for like a 24-page graphic novel. Like, imagine if you back three campaigns, that's $90 you just sunk in. Do you know how many like graphic, how many trade paperbacks you can buy with that? How many omnibuses you can buy with that? How many floppies you can? That thing is like, and then very much. Yeah. Like $9 in three campaigns. And that's the thing, you haven't even got your book yet.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It gets expensive because, you know, obviously Marvel and DC can print. They've got better deals with the printers. And once you fire the printer up, the more you can print out, the cheaper per unit they are.
Yeah, it's like insurance. People need to look like, for what I know, maybe you can correct me, the printers and how you get stuff down is kind of like insurance. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you have a car. When you first apply for your not like an insurance, they give you a high premium. A lot of places start doing a lot of different insurance stuff where, for what I know, they charge you high on insurance because they can't trust that you're not going to get in like a car crash or anything. Then after more years of you not having any problems, it goes down, actually. Because they've shown, hey, this guy's not going to crash into a diesel randomly on the highway.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing, too, is that with printing, the majority of the work, and by work, we mean money, because you had to pay for somebody to do something. The majority of the work is in the setup. So, you know, if it costs, you know, maybe it takes you 10 minutes to set the machine up to print a certain book. And, you know, that may cost $10 in the wages of the people who are doing all the work. Mm-hmm. $10. If you print one book off, well, you got to recoup your money. That's a $10 book. If you print two books, well, because it's like zip, zip once it prints. Okay, well, they're five a piece now. And change. We got paper costs. We got ink costs. We add all that in there. You print 100 of them, suddenly it's like 50 cents. Now I'm making up funny numbers. I know that. But that the principle is still the same. You know, when you're DC and you're like, okay, well, we've set the machine up. It took a half an hour to get this Marvel comic loaded in here and get the cover stock ready or the pre-printed covers. Let's go. We're going to print off 50,000 of them. Now we can, you know, they're costing like a nickel a piece. And that's something that the indie creator doesn't have because they're crowdfunding. And, you know, a successful crowdfunder, a super successful crowdfunder, sells 1,000 copies. So definitely $20 a piece.
And I don't know, because a lot of people have said the post office like services have been charging way more now. They've been bumping their prices up. Do you usually have to adjust your prices compared to theirs bumping up, don't
you? Every January, right around the 20th. And then again in October, when they raise the first class mail up for the holidays temporarily. And then it becomes permanent in January.
Oh, Lord. Fucking hell. Government jobs, man.
It's every year the costs go up just a tiny bit more.
Ugh, good gosh.
And that's the other thing that nobody thinks about, because I mean, everyone knows it happens, but they don't plan for it in their campaigns. So they'll launch a campaign in November, and they'll, even if they come to me and say, "Hey, you know, what are you charging right now?" I'm like, "Well, this is what it is right now." Great. And they price it to the cent. I'm like, "Well, that's probably not good." And then they don't fulfill till after March. You know, well, guess what happened between November and March? Postage went up. You didn't account for that because you didn't round up. That's why I say when it's like close to $8 for shipping, make it 10, because there's two numbers you're not counting on there: the potential for the increase in postage and the cost of shipping the book to me. The print, you got to pay your printer to say, "Hey, send all those books to Critical Blast." So you get a box of 100 books. Maybe it's, you know, $45 or more to send that, because it's coming freight. You got to say, "Okay, well, that was an extra 45 cents per book that counts as shipping cost. Add that on to the shipping cost that Critical Blast gave me."
And then a lot of people would probably factor in, why would they upcharge their prices come like October or November? Like you said, holiday season, everyone. Holiday season, absolutely. It's from like, I always kind of count holiday season starting with like Halloween, because it's Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and the New Year's. Well, they know a lot of people are going to be shipping all their items then. It's like, I think their biggest time of the year is like holiday season, shipping all those items. Well, you have to ship your items so they can charge you whatever they want to charge you, because they know you got to do it. That's just...
You can do it yourself. You can get in your car and you can drive to grandma's. Take the box.
Oh, God. Oh, goodness. Oh, God. If I could drive over to every single person's house and deliver the comic, I don't think people would even do that. Like, I gotta get my car and... You have? No way. Holy crap.
I have had a fulfillment list come in, and like, I'm not making a point of like, who's this going to, who's this going to, who's this going to, but you know, they do get sorted. And you know, when I do see a name catch my eyes, like, wait, that flagged something for a reason. Oh, that's going to Ethan Van Sciver. Maybe I'll slip in a Critical Blast magnet into that package, you know, so that he, you know, recognizes where it came from. But one of them is like, that flagged me because it was my town. It was like, I'm here. I drove there and gave him his book. It's like, hey, personal service. Here's your book.
Oh, I wanted to ask, did you happen to have, so how would I say this? Are there any comic creators where you see like their campaigns could make more, but what would you think is a big promise of why they're not making enough on their campaigns like they should? Because that's been a question asked for like a while at this point.
That is a great question, because you know, I see a lot of things that are they look like a quality product, and the person is out there beating the bushes and going on shows, and they're just, you know, they're not catching the audience. Now it could be that it could be a platform issue. It could be that, you know, wow, I've got this really sexy bad girl comic, and nobody's really paying attention to it. Well, maybe it's because you're not on Kickstarter, because that seems to be their jam. You go over there for that thing. Or you got like, you know, I've got this like great image 90s action thing, and it's drawn like, you know, the love child of Jim Lee and Todd McFarlane. But it's not doing anything. Well, that's because you are on Kickstarter, and that stuff sells on Indiegogo. So, you know, you got to find where your crowd is.
Oh, that. You're right. Draw and Talk. Tyler talked about that. He talked about like, if he threw a certain campaign of his for one of his projects up on like Indiegogo, wouldn't do so well. But if you put it on Kickstarter, because their algorithm works a bit differently on that website, it'll pop off more. A lot of people don't think about the things. It's like, have you looked? I don't think most people have even just even thought, like, wait a minute, if I'm launching this here, what's the actual reach it has? I think most people think of between Indiegogo and Kickstarter because they have the biggest reach because they've been around doing it the longest, right? A lot of people think about, well, what's the audience even like there? What's the most back thing there? You know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't come up with a great bacon sandwich and try to market it at a halal restaurant. It doesn't work. You know, you find out where the people who buy your thing are at. And that also means getting outside of this outer bubble called comics, because we have a lot of people say, I made a comic. I'm going to go to people who buy comics and sell them my comic. Sounds perfectly logical, right?
In theory, but, yeah.
Yeah, but what they're not taking into account is I've written this great horror story that is told in a comic. Maybe I should say, hey, comics people, I've got this. Oh, look, horror writing community. Hey, do you like comic books? Because guess what? I've written one. And you go to these markets that are just outside the box that you're living in and, you know, think about what, not just what your product is, but what your genre is. What kind of story are you telling? What kind of people like those kind of stories, even if they don't like comics? Maybe they like horror movies. Maybe they read Stephen King, but they've not read comics. You can say, you know, horror right over here. I got it. It's a comic book. Have you ever tried a comic book before? You never had a hot dog? You'll love it. It goes right in the end of your mouth. You bite into it. It's juicy.
I like to deep throat mine, you know, so I have to get the full savory.
Don't judge it.
I like to get the full savory taste in my mouth. Just kidding, everyone. That's going to get clipped
I've
on
had ketchup short. In mine. I know it's anathema, but you know.
Oh, God. I think that's a nice thing you let in there, too, which is, I think when I've been looking at like novel sales, because I might eventually do my own like write novel series in the future. The one that this is what I would be the worst in, but the best selling like novel genre currently right now is like romance. And it's like, what? If romance sells the best. So if you went on like Kickstarter and you were like, I have the newest 100-page romance novel, that'll probably blow up or do like decently well. You do that on Indiegogo, yeah, probably not might do so well. And then you'd be going on Twitter going, I have no backers. No one wants to support my dream. My quality. And, you know, and start the meltdown start. Like, no one wants to promote my stream. It's like, what are you talking about?
The big guys wouldn't let me on their coattail.
Even though I've been actively like shitting on them for like the past year, why won't you let me on your channel? Like, what? People are retarded, dude. I hate people so much.
You know what? I've done the Indiegogo thing very, very little. I'm not what you would call a crowdfunder creator. I did it once, and I was in a desperate situation. I mean, I was living in a hotel with my family, and it was like the job sucked. I was moving somewhere else eventually as soon as I could find the other job. But the hotel was like eating up the money. We were like, we're not buying a house here. We're not renting a house here. No point unpacking. And I was looking at, you know, being homeless in a couple of months. So I said, what can I do? Well, I've got, you know, books that I published. I had my first book had just come out, which was Gods and Services here. There's the title in that sign there. And it was Christmas Eve, and Ethan was opening up his stream to different people. I'm like, can I come on? And he said, yeah, gave me the link. I got in there. I got my 10 minutes of talk time about the project and got off, and nothing happened. So, you know, just because, you know, you get promotion on a time in a time slot with somebody who's got views still doesn't mean that you're talking to the right audience.
Yep.
You try
conversion
to sell
rates. When you talk about conversion rates are one of the hardest things to actually accomplish when I've been looking at a lot of the stuff. So like, let's say if you have, I don't know how big your channel is. I'm pretty sure you're almost at 2K subs or 3K subs, right? Yeah. I don't know if you have channel members, but if you have channel members, let's say you get like five of them. And I'm like, hey, the better money's on Patreon. Just even that, having a small amount of people that'll support you like that, it's going to be hard to move them from one place to another. People have this like comfortability thing. Once they're already comfortable somewhere, they kind of just want to stay there. It's kind of like, it's more like the idea of like planting your flag and that's where you make your home. Converting people into multiple different places is very hard. Probably one of the hardest things to do. It's a lot of people can't even figure out how you do it. You have to be someone really massive for that to happen. And even that doesn't get you every single person to come over, you know?
You can be so comfortable buying something one way. It's like, you know, I'm an Indiegogo guy. I buy from Indiegogo. Well, this is on Kickstarter. Okay. Well, wait a second. How come it's acting like this when I try to put my name in? How do I do? What do you mean you're not going to charge? You're not taking my address now. You're not going to take my address. You're going to send me something to ask for my address when thing ships. Why don't you just take it now? Wait, you're not going to charge me shipping until it actually ships? Oh my God. What if I don't have the money then? You know, there's just, they both work, but you know, I like one way. I don't like this other way. So I may not go buy things over here. But why I always tell people sell on both, you know, it doesn't really hurt you. If you have a product that is not going to sell on Indiegogo, sell it on Indiegogo anyway. And then you sell it on Kickstarter or vice versa. You try them both.
Yep.
Run one, then you run the other. And then you run the third because there's Fund My Comic out there now.
Yeah, Luke does a great thing with Fund My Comic. And that's something that I've talked to him about when he has been on a few times, which has been like he identified, hey, these websites kind of shadow ban people, or the way they promote this kind of medium like comics doesn't really get pushed up in their algorithm a lot. We'll just go make a website dedicated to just doing this, which makes a lot of sense because, as you said before, if you're just trying to market to comic book fans, well, you could just market to comic fans that just want to support you here. You know, the only issue that people have brought up is like, well, this website's not been around as long as these other two, so it's hard to drive traffic there. But the idea
at some point, Indiegogo was a brand new thing.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, a lot of people don't think about that. They're like, but these have been around longer. Well, by that logic, then nothing new could ever start ever again because something did it first. What? Yeah.
You know what's been around? You know what's been around longer than me? My grandmother. I can still beat her in a race.
Oh, God. You know,
because you've been around a long time doesn't mean that something else isn't a viable option for your needs.
Hmm. So I'll ask you about the whole like Ripascent thing. So what was your initial like thoughts and reactions when you first saw that?
I'll say the same thing that I say on Twitter. Competition is good. It as long as there's competition in the market, it's going to keep everybody in check. So, you know, it'll help keep prices down. Hopefully that's my idea. It is going to make me advertise more. I'm going to be out there speaking out saying, okay, so now that, you know, I'm not the only, and maybe I haven't been the only game in town. If I'm not, the other people have not been advertising enough for me to know.
The only other one I know possibly is like John Malin, but I've never heard of him doing what you've been doing though. There's no way he must, or at least wasn't doing it consistently enough to the point where I've heard about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that he does it, but I didn't know if it was more like a Sam's Club. It's like, okay, I know you. Yeah, let's do this thing. But you know, to be actually publicly open with, say, you know, like a website saying, "Hey, we do this thing. Here's our advertisement for it." And I was gonna send you that in the private chat here, and I got to not talking. I'll just drop that in there. You asked how many people we'd done fulfillment for. That many people. All the logos that will go by, all of those are people we have fulfilled for.
Oh my goodness. Let me just play it privately when I'm talking to you right now. All right. Yeah. That's the same thing I said too. You could be the person that fulfills campaigns for all these little guys that, because let's be honest here, they don't make enough money sometimes in their campaigns to make it a viable reason for Eric to help them. And he even said that in his videos, like, not going to be the service for everyone because there's not, it's just, I help people. So some people ask, like, well, is he only going to take on bigger creators? It would make sense to financially to take on bigger people's campaigns because it would make the most financial sense for him to have those services for you, right?
Well, let's face it. He has this huge warehouse that everyone's made a big deal out of. That's overhead. And if he's not, you know, filling it with, you know, the three issues of the three comics he's made so far, four issues, two ISOMs, an Alpha Corps, and maybe it is three issues. I don't know.
You're right. Yeah.
It's wasted space. And it's wasted space that you're paying for every month. Cause you know, even if you own it, you're paying, you know, overhead and electric and water and all those utilities. Internet. And stuff.
I heard bills are cheap from what I heard from people on Twitter. Fucking communist. I heard bills grow on trees. I heard money just be given to you for free.
So, you know, you've got to, the only way you can, get over that massive debt is to have product flowing through it all the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it makes sense that he wants to stock, you know, have people stock those shelves and pay for, you know, because I think part of what he's offering is a payment for inventory. You know, you want a place to put your books that's not in the living room, put them here. We'll put them on a shelf and charge you a monthly storage fee for it.
Yeah. And like, this is what people don't understand is like those bigger creators that people said he's going to work with, they don't want to do that stuff either. They already got enough going on. If people in their brains think about a lot of things bigger creators do to even stay relevant, all this content that they make, they pay editors, they put back to the bigger content creators that we're thinking about that he might work with, like Drunk3PO. He can live off his YouTube channel. Well, he probably doesn't want to, I don't know, waste time with the stuff that you did for him, which is still valuable. I'm not saying it's not, but he's got other things he's on his mind. He has to make enough money to pay his bills, his rent.
He was here because he was signing some of those books. So, you know, it made sense that, you know, come here and then, and had a great time. Now here's the thing, you know, he's, and I talked with Jay about this. Eric's his friend and it's putting him in a spot. It's like, you know, what do you like? I told him that, look, if my best friend opened up a car wash, I'm going to get my car washed there. I don't care where I've been washing it before. I don't care how nice the people were. He's my friend. He's running a car wash. Now, if he charges $45 for a car wash, I might say, yeah, you know, you do a good job, but I can't do this all the time.
I like Felipe's car wash.
Yeah. Sometimes I just got to get the car washed and out the door. So, you know, I'm glad. I'm happy to hear that Eric is offering this service. I wish, you know, some other people would do it too. And, you know, just because... because it's a need. Now I did sort of jump out of my chair during his announcement at one point with you know a few chosen expletives when he said that you know publishing and fulfillment and distribution was this gaping hole in the industry. I'm like, you son of a because we've been doing it for 3 years and yeah. I know he knows we've been doing it. So I'm like,
well, that's how I kind of
all of these. This is publishing.
Well, that's how I kind of always is. You know, I've learned that doing things online like that, you got to kind of play it up like WWE style. You know, got to have some fun with it.
And you know, I'm not playing into it directly against him. I just you'll hear me on stream saying, and here we are live from the gaping hole in the industry. That's just become my slogan. It may become the new model for Critical Blast Logistics, filling a gaping hole.
Critical Blast filling a gaping hole. You can't make it's two on the nose. It's just two on the nose. I'll say,
if you're watching, Eric, thank you. Thank you for doing this because since you've made the announcement, it has been the best and the most productive free advertising for Critical Blast Logistics. I could not have come up with a better campaign. So thank you.
Like that's what I also told people on my other shows when we do the panel shows is like, do people know how much your name circulated in conversations after his announcement? These are because people factor in. This is what people don't understand, dude. Like you mentioned before, reach. He let's be honest, he has bigger reach than we do in terms of like this space, not like your what you do for fulfillment. He just has bigger reach. And someone said, that doesn't mean anything. You're retarded. You're actually stupid. If Chris Brown promoted your YouTube channel to all of his fans, that matters way more than, well, someone like us doing it. It just does. That's not knock. It's just what it is, right? So when you have someone like him with connections to other bigger people, right? I imagine they probably throw your name out there. That might be the best promotion you could ever get, honestly.
Exactly. So it wasn't that he put it out there, but, you know, because the conversation was being had, other people put it out there, and it sort of, you know, rode the coattails of his reach. So... my name got put out there. I've had several people contact me. Some of them saying, you didn't lose this person or you didn't lose that person, did you? I was like, you know, you're not doomed, are you? I'm like, no, I'm not doomed. I've lost nobody. Nobody has jumped ship and said, hey, guess what? You know, I'm going over here now.
Going to the black guy. I'm leaving you.
Yeah. Go with God. You know, sometimes I get overwhelmed anyway. So, you know, like I'm sitting here. This month alone, I'm sitting here looking at how am I going to fulfill the Exiled, Fiendish 2.5, and Hunt the Littlest Umbrella, all at the same time.
Yeah.
What
people don't factor in, that we didn't mention before earlier in the show, which is like, what if there's times where you yourself can't do it? Like I said before, right there, there's three you're already doing. Well, I'd imagine a lot of people like launching their campaigns at the beginning part of the year because they want to get it done before the end of the year so they have a book coming out the next year, obviously, because it takes a while to get this stuff done. If someone had and make if someone can make enough money on their campaign, if you can't do it and there's financial sense for them to go to Eric, that does take a load off your plate, actually. It's not ever a bad thing, you know? And if they use Eric's services and he charges too much and that doesn't make sense for them, they can just come to you when you're done. I never understood people. Why did it matter if he announced his thing? It literally couldn't have been better. It literally doesn't hurt you in any way, but actually help you more that his announcement go, wait a minute, Critical Blast is for the smaller guys, Eric B for the bigger guys. That would still make it better. You can get all the people that are smaller, he can go to people that are bigger. Wait a minute. So you both don't lose all. I've had a lot of smaller
guys come to me now.
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, hold on.
I heard you do this.
So like, wait a minute, hold on. You both don't lose, it's nothing bad, and you both win. Why is this a problem? That's how you can tell people they're just drama farming. It's very rare in life where something like that happens, like announced like that, and then, you know, it just goes it's usually pretty lopsided, right? This case, one of the rare ones, you actually not only get better promotion out of it, all the smaller guys go, well, if his service is up for me, I'll just go to this guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
No point is that ever a bad thing, because everyone in the space always talks about, like, structure. Guys, structured society has fulfillment centers, okay? The indie comic scene space needs that. Novels, whatever. There needs to be some level of structure here. There just has to be. Because, well, people want to buy stuff and get it in a timely fashion. Like, we all do. You know? Whenever you order something from Amazon, I'd imagine you want it in a timely fashion. It's just how it is, you know?
And at no point has McDonald's put Wendy's out of business. And while they're both selling hamburgers, Burger King is still operating just fine. There's room for a lot of people doing the same thing in any industry.
Yeah, good Lord, man. I swear Twitter is either the best thing for the world or the worst thing. Oh, I'd say most days of the year it's the worst thing. But it goes to show you just how mind-blowingly NPC-ish people are. Where, like, there are people out there that don't know anything about doing this at all, and they just go, well, I think this person's scamming someone. That's why that person that I mentioned in my videos, he was like, oh, well, this Eric thing is a scam. Well, is Critical Blast scamming people? He was like, no, he's not. Then why would it, what the fuck are we even arguing? Like, scamming someone is helping them out with their business? If that's true, then, God, man, we need to start suing then.
Yeah, here's the thing. Eric is announcing this at a time when he's under a lot of fire for what people are saying the quality of his comic is. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't buy the comic. I will not review the comic, so I'm not going to say. And I've actually technically gotten out of reviewing comics because I can't win. If I give something a good review, then I call RJ's just going to court their business. If I give something a bad review, I won't get their business, maybe.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, yeah. I just mean, yeah.
It's a lose-lose situation for me. But, you know, you've had everybody here has just been dumping on Eric because of the perception that Isom 1 is not the juice isn't worth the squeeze when it comes to the book itself. So while they're all hot about that, he just, you know, walks up to the pit of hungry lions and says, look, I have more red meat, and throws it out there and they pounce on it.
Like what you said there also is a thing that I think a lot of people have talked about when it comes to like indie comic reviews is a lot of people think just from how you would review it, not you, like just how like the idea of it. Well, if you give that person a bad review, it's like, would that mean like any bad thing might happen? Like they might not talk to you on your shows anymore. Would they like unfollow you on social media, all that stuff. And I've told people from the very beginning, I might like you because I might have you on the show. That doesn't mean I'm going to like your product. That's just like how that would work. I don't know where people confuse the two. It just wouldn't make any sense.
That happens in the bigger industries too, though. I mean, you see, larger review sites that will just basically turn themselves into shills for bad product because
IGN did it recently with Madam Web. Yeah, IGN sucking up Madam Web, and everyone's like, you don't have to lower your soul that much. You don't have to sell it, IGN. The bar is already low for IGN. Like our expectations were already low, but holy fuck, shilling for Madam Web? Okay, yeah. Okay.
Well, that's because we've seen people lose their Marvel freebies because they gave, you know, Marvel Comics a bad review on something. But like Marvel's mm-hmm. like, well, if you're going to give us bad reviews, then, you know, why are we giving you stuff where you can run us down? And, you know, I can see it from a certain perspective, but you know, if you're going to do a review site, don't expect to review the stuff you're given for free. You're going to put your own money into it and make your revenue in a different fashion, whether it's through advertisement or subscriptions. But don't expect to get the material for free. You're going to have to expense that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you mentioned this last time, which was when the company sends you stuff, and if you don't really actually give them a glowing review on something, then they kind of go like, maybe we'll skip this guy out next time. But that's why people pick and choose when they get bad reviews to stuff. You know, they're like, okay, one out of like the five things they'll send you, then you can have that freebie. But if you're like constantly always giving them bad reviews, then I'd imagine they're not going to send you anything, which to your point does make some sense from a business point of view. But you've seen it now. Some of these Hollywood media sites, if you're big enough, you have to be like massively big, like Variety, Hollywood Reporter, Deadline, to the point where they could like shit on your movie, but they want the access and the reach that these websites have. They'll give them invites to their movie premieres and all that stuff. But people like me and you, I mean, we shit on their movies, though. We ain't getting invited. Let's be honest. All that stuff is pretentious anyway, man. Like, back in the day, I was always thinking, like, man, it'd be cool to be going to a red carpet premiere or get invited to an early screener. It's like, all that stuff is just fluff. Like, it doesn't mean anything. You know?
Early screeners aren't all they're cracked up to be. I mean, it's just sitting there watching another movie with people whose faces you recognize if you read their reviews in the newspaper or on television.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to several. Back when I used to, you know, do more movie reviews. Again, you know, my time got to a place where it was better spent doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you write reviews to pull in traffic and you make $100 from your Google ads over a span of 7 months, and then you fulfill comics for 6 hours on a day and you make $500, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those things where, you know, you're getting paid, what, $100 a month to basically, like, kind of play out, be a fence sitter for, like, these corporations. And it's like, that's not even worth the money to be a fence sitter. If I'm going to be a fence sitter, I need some actual hard cash. I need some big money right there. I'm just saying, you know, if I'm going to sacrifice my morals and my integrity for how I even feel about any piece of media, I need some actual money there. But
yeah, if you need to be a pitch man, pay me pitch man dollars. I will be your Billy, whatever his name is, and I'll ShamWow the hell out of your product.
Oh, recently on your channel, you launched a new book, actually?
Yes, the new book.
It was The Devil something,
it's
right?
It's so new, I don't have it in my hand. But at one point, we had launched The Devil You Know. Well, let's put these in order. The Devil You Know, which was an anthology of 20 horror stories. And as soon as I saw the cover come in from the guys, I'm like, I know exactly what this is going to do, and we're going to have to do two more books to do it. So we launched The Devil You Know Better, which was another 20 stories. We got Mike Barron in this one, and we got Hart Fisher in it. So we started getting names. Actually, we've been getting names before, so I shouldn't short anybody on that. And I was like, okay, well, the third book is going to be The Devil You Know Best, and it's going to be the final of this series of books. But yeah, we had a great time talking with all the artists. The Devil You Know Best is going to be larger. It's going to have 25 stories in it. Mm-hmm. It's out. It's available on Amazon. It's available in Walmart. It's available at Barnes & Noble. And if you go to Critical Blast and you hit the little books and publishing tab, you'll see that what we're reading for right now is our next anthology called The Fables Next Door.
Mm-hmm.
Who, by the way, we've already got submissions in from Bill Willingham and Alan Dean Foster are going to be in this book. So look for it. It's going to be something.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you go there at the bottom of that page, there's a little table of all the other books that we've published with buy buttons where you can buy direct from the printer. If you do that, the creators of these books, the authors, I'm not the author of all these books. There are other authors. They get a much larger royalty payment. They get a larger chunk of it because they're not having to split it with Amazon and Walmart and Barnes and Noble.
Because that's always still a dream of mine, before I die. I've always been, before I die, I will have my own book series. The thing is, whenever someone shows me stuff like that, or, you know, Johnny Douglas, he has his book that he finally did, like Jim Wilburn has his book, a lot of people have their own novels. It's like, damn, I got to sit down one day and actually do it. That's the problem with me. It's like, I do all these shows and I do everything. It's like, there's, my problem is, how do I fit it into my day? It's like, maybe I just get off the internet one time and just like sit in a different room and just write out a story. I don't know. You know,
I had one computer that had no internet access. I couldn't get on the internet if I wanted to. And I'd have that one. And you just sit down and you put your butt in your chair and you write 1,000 words, whether they're good or not, whether they make sense or not, as long as it's, you know, you try to do a, this happens and then this happened and then this happened. Oh, I got some really good dialogue here. I'll just put that in there. And as soon as you hit 1,000 words, you're allowed to leave. You do that every day. If you do that every day, you've written 365,000 words over the course of a year. That's a pretty damn good novel.
That's pretty, yeah. And how is the process for an editor on a novel compared to like a comic book?
Pretty much the same. I mean, you're looking for story consistency. I guess the editor of a comic book has to look at more things because not only is it just like, oh, spell check and grammar correction and this person's voice doesn't quite sound, that's not something that person would say. Or you've switched from perfect present tense to past tense and it's not a flashback scene, blah, blah. But now you got to start looking at things like, you know, hey, this guy's shirt was purple in the first panel and now it's green. What happened here? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, he was firing the gun in his right hand and suddenly it's in his left. When did he switch hands here? So you got to edit the writer and you've got to edit the artist and you've got to edit the colorist and you've got to edit the letterer. You've got more balls in the air that you have to juggle, I think, when you're editing a comic book.
Oof, gosh. It's one of those things where, like, do you think there's still good sales in novel books like that?
Oh, I hope so. I'm putting too many of them out there for there not to be.
Yeah. That's what I've heard. It's like you can't just really hope and bank off one. You got to put more out, maybe in said series or do another one.
Yeah. And here's the thing I'm finding is that you don't just put the book out there. You put it out there in multiple formats. We have
like audiobooks, right? Yeah.
Well, not just audiobooks, but just the size of the book makes all the difference. We have books that we put out there that are in, like this size. They're hardcover. They're this size. But then, you know, we do the same book and we put it out there in a 5x8 paperback, like The Monsters Next Door here, which is the last anthology we just did. And then, you know what? For the same material, we put it out there in a pocketbook. And what we're finding is that when we do that, all three of them are selling. So somebody sees the hardcover like, oh, I want to read that, but, you know, I don't want to pay a hardcover price. I don't have that kind of money. Oh, look, it's available in paperback. Okay, that's not bad. Ooh, pocketbook. I remember pocketbooks. That's really cheap. I can slip that in my back pocket and, you know, go read it at lunch in the cafeteria every day. So, you know, let your audience have choices, even if it's a choice of the same one thing. You know, McDonald's, they have one beef patty. That's it. It's the same beef patty, but they've got like 7 different sandwiches they make out of it.
Yeah, that's offering variety is what customers mostly want. Because if you just offer like one thing, a lot of people go, well, that's, do you think in general, there's just more sales if you just offer variety, which is not bad. It's definitely a provable concept, actually. What is the best seller, do you think, though? Just the hardcovers?
It's a mix. And you know, it changes month to month, depending on what the newest release is. You know, some of the hardcovers, one of the best sellers we got right now is Wayne Klingman's paperback version. He has a hardcover, but the paperback of the Buffalo Mob is selling really well right now, which, you know, good for Wayne because he's making some money now. He was making money before, but he's making money through us, which means more to me.
Yeah, it's usually a pretty good thing.
Yeah. I like writing Wayne checks.
Yeah, what you're saying is you're the mafia, actually. Yeah.
I like writing Wayne checks because if I'm writing Wayne checks, that means I have money to write checks with.
That's good. So yeah,
very good thing. But you know, this was his book here, and he had done the Mafia in Hollywood before, but he's like it wasn't doing anything for him. I'm like, well, let us run with it, and what we'll do is we'll take each chapter here, and we'll put illustrations in it. We get an artist in here to jazz this thing up a little bit, and you know, it's not the, you know, his bestseller, but you know, it made it different and people were buying it. So, you know, we did the same thing with the Buffalo Mob. We're like, you know, how do we vet these photographs so that, you know, we make sure we get the right license. And my business partner is a graphics designer. He's like, we don't use the photographs at all. That's how we get around it. We use the photographs for reference and then we draw them. and put in artist interpretation of this character. Genius. You know, it's all done in-house now.
I'm glad you have all this success. This is definitely a model way. You basically are your own boss, essentially make your own hours at this point. Yes. Holy crap. So your wife's probably like always like, man, he's never home.
Well, I am never home because I'm divorced now. So,
oh God. I guess you were like, yeah, I'm married to the books. That's how it works, actually.
I'm married to my job.
So the last thing to ask you is, what are like some tips you could offer, you know, novelist writers that are going to eventually, hopefully, maybe publish their own book in the future?
If you want to write well, you need to read well. So, you know, find people who are writing in the genre that you want to write in, and find the people who are selling the best. May not be your taste, but you're not reading, you know, you're not always reading to enjoy it. You're reading to learn. So, you know, if you don't like Stephen King, but he's the top seller at the moment, buy the Stephen King book and read it and say, why is this the bestseller? What is it about this that people are attracted to? And how can I do the same thing without doing the same thing? Take those trips. Steve, you know, as much as I think Stephen King gets kind of weird on Twitter, his book On the Craft of Writing is a Bible. Everyone should have that if they want to write anything. Get his on Writing the Craft paperback. It's a quick read, very inspirational and very instructional. But besides that, the thing is, okay, so Warren Murphy was an idol of mine. He used to write The Destroyer before I did. He passed away writing notes on my manuscript for a novel. I always tell people my writing was so bad it killed him. But he used to tell in his classes, if you're waiting for inspiration, you're not a writer, you're a waiter. So the thing to do is, you know, whether you're inspired or not, if it's your allotted time to write, sit down and write. Open up the blank page, stare at it as long as you got to, but put your fingers on the keyboards and start putting words down. 1,000 words a day, minimum. You can go more. But you know, if you do 2,000 on a Monday, that doesn't mean you take Tuesday off. You sit down on Tuesday and you go for that 1,000 again. And maybe you do more that day. If you give yourself, you know, 900, forgive yourself. It's okay to do that, but don't skip it.
Also, I think this is something that I've seen with people when they get their books read, they're like usually mad that their family and friends don't read it. It's like, I'll tell you about this right now. Your family and your close friends are not your audience for your work. No, they're just not interested. For the most part, they probably don't even think you're good. It's the reason why they're not even giving your thing a look. It's better to not need validation from those people. Not saying they're bad, but it's, you know, don't do it.
A wise man once said, a prophet is not without honor in his own country. So
that's true, actually. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, their grandma's going to buy your book because grandma loves you. And then she put it on a shelf because it looks nice and has your name on it. It's as good as a picture of your graduation to her.
Oh, gosh. And if you're black, you will not have any parents around you because that's how they leave. That's how it works. CNN said, all right. You got any big plans for, YouTube channel or anything else you got coming up this year? Actually, you've been competing with the black man, so you know you got a lot of.
I'm not going to let up on him just because of that, but the publishing schedule is aggressive right now. I mean, we just released a coloring book of all things today, and we've got two more in the pipeline, adult coloring books. We have, you know, we're reading for The Fables Next Door. After that, we're going to do Gods and Services New Location. I've got at least 10 books that are on the slate for this year alone. And a lot of those are graphic novels. We are going to be, we've packaged up Timothy Olsen's Melvin as a comic book. Now that's global distribution. That was formerly a crowdfunder. Now it's on Amazon. It's in Walmart. We've taken Grayscale books 1 and 2 and put them together. We've taken the Incantessi and put them together. When, you know, at some point we're going to be mass releasing the artist edition for Perfect 10, but it's going to be a whole lot more than what the crowdfunder is because it's going to be one of these IDW style artist editions. We're in talks with people who I won't say because we're in talks. We haven't signed, you know, a deal to put them out yet, but their names you're going to know. and they're books that you're going to recognize, and they're going to be published by Critical Blast. So,
because I wanted to ask
you, have your graphic novel and it's sitting out there. You crowdfunded it, and now it's like, well, I did that. Now what am I doing? You've got all those print files that aren't making you money. You know how to find us.
I want to ask you this other thing, which is when someone goes on your website, how do you find your comic books, actually? Is it just under the book section, right?
Books and publishing, yes. Not the books section, but the very second tab. We have the logistics tab is first, and then the books and publishing. You know what? I'm going to get rid of all those other tabs because they just confuse people. I don't need them.
I think it's the store op option just brings me to the clothing line.
That's the Teespring. No, you don't want that one.
Yes.
That's another confusing thing because you think, I want to buy books, I'll go to the store. So there's a tab called Books and Publishing. You click that, you're going to see that great big the little video window for the Fables Next Door and all the reading. Just scroll past that, and then at the bottom it's going to say Other Books from Critical Blast, and it's going to be all of them. All the things we've got available right now. It's an eyeful, isn't it?
It is. You got a lot of stuff here. You have one where it's called Gray Kales, Book One, Welcome to Glitter City. What's that supposed to be? That's cool.
That's Grayscale. That was that's a superhero graphic novel. It was two issues that were crowdfunded. Now it's one big story put together. He's a superhero who controls the power of karma. And bad things can happen to you if you're a bad person and he wants them to. Or good things can happen to you if you're a good person and he wants them to. He can nudge the karmic balance a little bit.
All right. Got a lot of interesting stuff here. You always try to, throw in some money when I get paid, get something from your website. And if you see an order, you'll be like, oh, I know that guy. He's hot, sexy, and rich and good looking.
I knew that.
Yeah, see that's the thing we need now is I think what's gonna make people better and doing a lot of this stuff is what you've been doing. Have your own website that you could sell your own books through. Like after this is what I'm gonna eventually do if I ever do this stuff in the future, which is like after it does whatever it does on crowdfunding sites, make your own website and sell it through your website. Like in theory, wouldn't you want to overprint to some extent if you have the money because like you wanna have books to sell, right? Wouldn't you?
Well guess what my inventory is right now.
Overstock?
You're looking at it. That's my full inventory.
Lord.
See, here's the other thing about our business model. When you buy one of these creators' books, whether from our website or from Amazon or from Barnes & Noble or from Walmart or from Joe's Bookstore, they make the order. The book gets printed and shipped. There is no inventory. There is no overhead. There is no storage fee. I don't have racks and racks of books that I have to go take care of something and pull it off the shelf and package it up. Oh, Amazon has those. Walmart has those. And they're right-sizing their orders like, this guy ordered, we've got two orders for this book. It means there's probably at least three other people who want it. Go get five of them and put it on the shelf, and then we'll be able to fulfill those other ones faster. We got 100 orders. Better go get 1,000 of those books.
Well, and last thing I'll ask you is any shout-outs you want to give to anyone in particular? Anything else you want to say before we head out?
You know what? I would not be here with logistics or publishing or fulfillment if it was not for the sage advice and wisdom of my mentor, friend, and partner, George Peter Gatsis. So if you go to georgepetergatsis.com, you'll see all the work that he's been doing for years behind the scenes, sort of silently being the shadow behind the throne in several places. So shout out to George on that. George, I appreciate you more than I could ever let you know. So I'm letting you know here.
Now, I tell people constantly, remember, guys, competition is good. Now, you're like, I got to up my game. That's a good thing. We can always improve at something. And like I've mentioned this to every creator out there, I think it's valuable to have the podcast that you do out there on like podcasting platforms because the reach of those are absolutely insane. And I'll be doing an announcement video on that very soon. And you guys will enjoy that. So if you guys happen to join the show, you can watch and listen to the show, podcasting platforms, when you're at the gym, banging your wife, when you need something to listen to, while you're just sitting down and chilling. And with that, thank you, man, for being on again. Can't wait till you have a, third appearance again. And we'll see you guys later. Goodbye, everyone. Peace.